You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
It's going down right here.
In this league will be taking over, and there's so much football stuff I want to continue to get with. But we got to give baseball its due. We got to be fair to baseball. They're currently in spring training. George, have you been watching a lot of spring training, or are you getting pulled away from all of this football stuff?
No, I don't know if I'm a glutton for punishment. You know, I wrote a column for Sports Grid that was just posted, I believe, yesterday, and the title of the column is 9 Reasons Why Spring Training Sucks. It's true. I mean, it's a glutton for punishment. When spring training first started, you know, once again, I forget what column I was writing that day, but I'm watching the games. You know, I got 3 TVs on my den, so I'm watching, you know, the Yankees, probably the Mets, and whatever games on the MLB network. And it's like, oh, great. Now it's like, can we get this over with already? When's the 28th? You know, when's the season starting? This is terrible here. You know, because you watch these games, and one of the reasons why I think spring training sucks is I'm watching 2 games the other day: Yankees versus the Braves and Red Sox versus the Cardinals. And in both games, both teams are wearing the same colored uniform tops.
Are you kidding me?
I can't tell who's who. They do this a lot in spring training. I don't know if they can't get the laundry bill done, if the washing machine's broke, whatever it is. But they, you know, can we call the other team? Hey, you know, we're going to wear our blue tops tonight. How about you wear white? You know, I don't care if they go skins and shirts. Okay, just please, not the same tops. I mean, come on. I guess for certain, some players, I might care about that. You know, I don't know if I want to see Dominic Smith with without a shirt on. But, there's a play at first base. You have 18 guys who all look the same. It's like, this just drives me insane.
Well, George, if I'm not mistaken, I think I just found this lovely article that you did write on Sports Grid. One of the things you mentioned is the idea that stats are overrated. And I'm assuming it just kind of goes along the lines of you can't buy too much into what's going on in spring training. So when you're kind of preparing yourself for your baseball drafts, how much, if anything, can you really take away from spring training? Are there kind of maybe just baselines that you're looking to see guys clear, maybe guys getting back from injury? What is it that you're looking for, if anything at all?
Well, stats are certainly overrated, but they're not completely meaningless. And then what I mean by this is that I don't want to hear about the guy hit 9 home runs and he's batting .462. That's great. And if a guy's coming back from injury, that's really good, because you do want to see that. Like, a player's coming back from injury, especially any kind of hand injury, you know, for a batter, hand, wrist, arm, yes, I want to make sure he can swing that bat. So that's a good thing. But you'd have to do a deeper dive. All right? Those 9 home runs, well, who'd they come against?
Right.
You know, what inning are we talking about here? We're talking about a 7th inning where he's facing a guy from single A that's never going to see the majors? Or are we talking about, you know, he hit the 2nd inning against a legitimate starting pitcher? You know, that's important to me, you know. So especially at this point in spring training, where a lot of the teams still have their double A players that were invited to camp still there, you know, and it's only now that those players are being sent away, you know. And also, listen, he's batting .462. It's March 10th. The season doesn't start 2 more weeks, you know?
Yeah.
I need him to play well closer to that. Is he, you know, is he hitting his high point now and now he's going to go to a slump to start the regular season? Plus, let's face it, we hear this all the time. Some guys don't perform well in April in the cold weather up here in the Northeast. Well, Florida and Arizona, it ain't cold. So that's another reason why those stats just, it doesn't really matter unless they're starting off on a road trip or they're playing a dome. You know, so like I said, it's good to see, you know, and it does give you an idea. But as you'd mentioned, only the really players coming off injury are all that important to me. Everything else is just superfluous.
Is there anybody so far through? Nice there, George. That's impressive. I feel like Blewett is also the guy who carries the show in terms of an impressive lexicon.
Oh my God, Blewett has a word of the day calendar.
I believe that entirely.
Look up some of these words he's saying during the show. What does Mike mean here?
Is he just insulting me?
He's making fun of me, and I don't know it. God, right? I mean, I have a college degree, and I have no idea what this guy's talking about.
And he sounds so darn smart when he says it, too, that you're like, yeah, that's like, he could be making the words up. And I'm like, oh, that's a word I need to add to my vocabulary there. Ah, the good old Mike. The good old Mike.
You're absolutely right.
Is there anybody?
Mike, you can't trust Mike.
is there anybody that's caught your eye so far throughout spring training? Has anybody that you know, kind of popped your eyes?
Or, you know, I wonder if I'm the pessimist here, or, you know, as I like to call me, I'm the grouch. So I the positive doesn't really stick out to me. It's the negative.
Okay.
You know, Zach Greinke, all of a sudden, he can't deliver more than 85 miles an hour. Uh-huh. All right. That's a huge concern, especially when I had to draft him as my number one pitcher, I believe, in the great fantasy invitational, whatever that with all of us playing in it, that I got stuck drafting him because there was a huge pitching run in the second round. You know, so I didn't want him as my number one, but I ended up having him as my number one. And now, like last year, and our lovely boss Mike Cordano will remember, Cordano had to take Greinke last year, but they got him in round 4 or 5 in a league. And Mike Blewett and I gave him a lot of grief because he had the same problem last year, where his velocity was down. Ended up being a very good year for Greinke. It paid off for Cordano. So I sort of have to hope the same thing happens here. But that's what sticks to me. Not the positive so much. You know, this is from a player I never expected.
Yeah.
But the negative, especially with pitchers. You know, if the velocity's down, because, you know, it's too early for the dead arm period. That generally happens in probably a week, 8, 9, 10 days from now, where you worry about a dead arm. What's up with his velocity? He's up there in age. This is not a young kid. You know, has he lost it? Is he going to have to become more of a pitcher rather than a thrower? So all this concerns me right now. And I'll be honest with you, any other drafts I'm doing, I certainly have more than a few coming up the rest of this month.
Yeah.
Greinke is much further down my rankings list. I doubt I'll have him on any other teams.
I mean, that's something to look for. I think that's a good point there, and just in terms of finding the reasons why something could exist, right? So since Greinke gets up there in age, him losing velocity, it makes a lot of sense. Along the lines with this spring training stuff, does some of these guys who are signing late, we'll talk about some of the guys that just signed very recently, or even a guy like Jake Arrieta, still not with the team, does that concern you at all that they're going to, you know, maybe get off to rough starts to the beginning of the year?
It has to concern you.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say, best case scenario, Arrieta signs Monday. Yeah, you know, we're hearing San Diego's kicking the tires. So let's say, it doesn't matter who he signs with. What kind of shape is he in?
Mm-hmm.
And by shape, I don't mean he got old and fat and was eating everything in sight during the offseason. I mean, has he been throwing?
Right.
You know, or is he going to need a full spring training, a full 6 weeks to get ready? I mean, you look at it, if he needs a full 6 weeks, you're talking, you'll see him in May. You know, it's a nice gun for a month of the season. You know, so you just don't know, and that's the big question. Does he need 3 weeks? Does he need 4 weeks? Is he throwing? Is he throwing on a college campus, a high school campus, you know, playing T-ball? No, we don't know.
Right.
You know, we just don't know what kind of shape he's in there. So it's a huge concern that, you know, even if he signs at this point, he won't be ready until May. You know, or mid-April, he's going to miss 5 starts, 6 starts, 10 starts. We just don't know. You know, this is unusual. This is really uncharted territory. We've never really had this before. It's been extremely strange. I mean, I'm 48. You know, I've been around pretty much since free agency began. I can't remember an offseason like this with all these guys. And I'm not talking about, once again, scrubs or bottom-of-the-order guys. I'm talking about guys who can play. Arrieta's an all-star. You know, guys who can absolutely should be signed at this point, but they're not. So it's a concern for fantasy owners. And for me, Kevin, it's this. I don't mind taking a shot at one. You know, Arrieta, Cobb, Lynn, whatever. I'd actually go Arrieta, Lynn, Cobb if I had to put them in order.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not taking two. Yeah,
right.
I'm not taking a second guy. We're seeing the hitters start to sign, right? Cargo signed.
Yeah.
So he's back. Jonathan LaCroix signed. So the hitters are starting to sign, but the pitchers not so much. And I'm wondering if the teams are thinking the same thing. Why am I paying this price? You know, I'm going to pay whatever they want per year if I know they can't play the first month of the season.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if it could be, I mean, listen, situationally, when we're talking trades, it's impossible to predict, but I wonder if we have to wait a while for Jake Arrieta and he gets off to a slow April, if you can just keep it in the back of your mind, like, you know what, there's rust here, and perhaps the owner in your league is panicking, then maybe you're able to buy super low on Jake Arrieta because this guy's like, you know what, I'm done with this, he's not good, but in your mind, you're able to say, listen, he's off to a slow start, perhaps he can turn this around. Let me ask you a little bit then about some of these hitters that have signed in the past couple of days. Moustakas, I think, was the guy who first started when he went back to the Royals. It was a 1 year, $6.5 million deal. It was pointed out that he probably really regrets now not taking that qualifying offer, which would have netted him $17.4 million for 2018. Coming off the 38 home run season last year, Moustakas is back in Kansas City. How do you feel about that?
Well, I mean, fantasy owners, that's good for you. You know, he's comfortable there. We know he can hit there, even though it's, once again, it's a pitcher's ballpark, not a hitter's ballpark. But he's comfortable there. He's still, you know, incentivized to have a big season to go back in free agency next year. You think he's upset about losing $11 million? Yeah, I think he might be. He also turned down a three-year, $45 million offer from the Los Angeles Angels. So he didn't read the offseason correctly.
No.
You know, and it's going to cost him big time. But if you drafted him, and you probably got him very late in your draft, it very well could pay off for you. I think you got to bargain it. Would you rather have him end up with the Yankees? Of course, short porch in right field. But that was really never going to happen. I don't think going to KC in this case is bad because you don't have to worry about the culture change. You know, about him going to a new locker room, new city. You know, if he went to a team like the Yankees or Boston, he would have had to deal with the media that going bananas expecting you to win every game and hit 50 home runs. Now he's back in his comfort zone. So I think for fantasy owners, if you drafted him, you're fairly happy about this.
I like that point. I think that that's really good. It's just the idea of it's where he's used to, and I think that does matter. I wonder, can you factor in the idea that he could be someone, and again, it's a long way away, but he could be someone that's moved at the deadline to a contender? Because, I mean, the 6.5 is not a big number, and again, obviously, he's going to be hitting free agency again, and the Royals look like a team that's trying to reset the deck, so I don't know how competitive they'll be next year. Can you factor that in at all, or do you just have to continue to roll with the punches and leave Moustakas where he's out on your board and not worry about the fact that this guy could be someone that we see being shopped around come trade deadline time?
You know, Kevin, I think that's an awesome point. Listen, I'm a hockey guy, and Pete Considori will know this. I always believe the Vancouver Canucks signed Thomas Vanek, a veteran forward, for the sole reason this season of trading him, and they did it at the deadline. I think this is almost the same situation with Moustakas. Yes, I think Casey's happy to have him back, but it's a $6.5 million. That's nothing in today's baseball.
Right.
They will absolutely be able to trade him at the deadline to a team. Let's just say, hey, you know, the Red Sox, I mentioned them, Devers gets hurt. Yeah, he gets hurt in whatever, May, June, and they need a third baseman. You don't think the Red Sox are going to come crying from Moustakas?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Yankees probably won't be in that situation because they have minor leaguers that they'll just plug in there. But you can go all on all through teams, you know, that could need a third baseman. I mentioned the Angels wanting him. Well, now that he can have him, give up whatever it is, and they're not paying that price, and still think about signing him in the offseason. So I think I couldn't agree with you more. I think Moustakas in some ways was signed to be traded.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they know that. Listen, he's $6.5 million. We're not even gonna pay it all year because we know we're trading him in July. You know, we're trading to a team that needs him. I found the Royals. I'm going to play it smart here. You know, as soon as a team loses a third baseman, that's in contention.
Right.
You know, Yankees, Red Sox, Cardinals, whatever team it might be, Dodgers. I call him, hey, Moustakas.
Yeah.
You know, what can I get for him? I'll trade him as soon as I can. You're you know, small market. Hey, you want to save the money anyway. You know you're not signing him after the season more than likely.
Mm-hmm.
So why not get as much value for him as possible?
And I think, you know, In terms of where he could be moved, again, it's just I think trading within fantasy leagues, especially baseball, because it's every single day, you have to just kind of have, you know, some things to mark down, keep a bookmark on. And a guy like Moustakas is someone that, you know, you can look at in July and maybe be able to grab him for a lower price, because odds are if he's traded, it's going to be to a better situation, because that means that he's going from a team that's not winning, most likely, to a team that is winning. If he all of a sudden ends up in Boston, and again, it's not going to bump him up drastically. If I told you that he signed with Boston instead of the Royals, it's not going to, like, he's going to be the first third baseman off the board. Obviously, that's not how big of a leap we're talking here, but you know, he's going to a better situation. There could be more opportunities for runs and RBIs and see some better pitches. I guess really the only thing where it could be a negative is if you were, say, in an AL only league and he got moved to a National League team.
Yeah, that'd be a bummer.
That would stink.
That would definitely be a bummer. I mean, I'll be an optimist here. I don't see how it could be a worse situation for all the reasons you mentioned. Kansas City already said it. Kauffman Stadium is one of the worst hitters' ballparks in the majors. So he's almost certainly going to a better ballpark. You know, probably a better lineup, right? That's why they're in contention. There's a chance that it's a pitching-dominated team, of course. But I would agree with you once again. You know, I'd like to disagree and fight a little bit, but I'm on board here. You know, I just think that he's going to end up going to a better situation. The bottom line is this. I think your premise is correct. I think he was signed to be traded. You know, I think the Royals are going to play this smart. Now, you've already lost Hosmer. You know, you lost Lorenzo Cain. You're not competing this year. You signed Moustakas because he was cheap. He came for pennies on the dollar. You know, $6.5 million, even to KC, is more than doable. And you know, you can trade him, you know, whatever month it might be, and you're going to get, you know, I don't think you'll get a top prospect, but you'll get a good prospect, maybe a team's top six, top seven prospect overall, and another low-level guy. Hey, it's something for nothing here.
Right.
And you're not paying all that $6.5 million anyway. You'll pay half. You'll pay $3 million. So I think this makes sense for all sides.
I think that's totally fair. Let's just run through a couple of other the big names that got signed. We had Carlos Gonzalez go back to the Rockies. It could be a crowded outfield situation there. I mean, is Carlos Gonzalez back in Colorado moving the needle for you at all?
I mean, it sounds nice. You know, but I was in the middle of a draft last night. I think we were in round 23 when he got signed. It's slow draft. And people are like, oh, Cargo got signed. Well, who cares? I mean, really? I wish I would have waited on my pick now. Really? For Carlos Gonzalez or Jonathan LaCroix, for that matter?
Yeah.
There's a reason they were still out there. They didn't hit. In Colorado, they didn't hit. You know, so doesn't that worry you some? Plus, I guess it bothers me more because now you got, as you said, you got more cooks in the kitchen now.
Mm-hmm.
Cargo, Parra, I mean, we know Blackman's okay. Desmond, Dahl, does this affect Dahl now? You know, what's going to happen here? Is he not going to get a full-time job? Or are they going to play the game at first base now? Would Desmond play more first base? Well, maybe Ryan McMahon doesn't play full-time now. So that's what my problem is. What is Gonzalez's role going to be? You know, what's Dahl's role going to be? You know, so this affects all these other guys. Pretty much every guy other than Blackman. We know he's the full-time starter there. But it affects McMahon. It affects Desmond. It affects Dahl. Even Cargo. Granted, he would go before round 23.
Right.
But what are we talking here? And your outfield of five? Your first bench guy? You know, this is not the Cargo of old here. Yeah, you know, so I have a lot of concerns about Cargo. I'm not really looking to grab him.
Well, you heard it there from George Kurtz. We'll hear more on the other side of this break. We're going to talk about the catchers and preview the Roto Experts exclusive Edge package. That's next on Fantasy Sports Today.
If you're playing daily fantasy basketball on DraftKings or FanDuel this NBA season, you need to sign up for Daily Roto. Built by a team featuring millionaire maker winners and live final champions, Daily Roto's customizable projections, podcasts, strategy guides, and lineup optimizer will help you compete with the pros in a fraction of the time. Better yet, you can save 10% off using the promo code FNTSY. So go to dailyroto.com/premium to learn more about their product.
And we are back here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Kevin Walsh and George Kurtz here on Fantasy Sports Today. And we are going to talk about the Roto Experts exclusive Edge package. And you can get your Roto Experts exclusive Edge package over at rotoexperts.com. This year's version is new and improved with more analysis than ever, including an all-day chat channel, stats, projections, and improved cheat sheet generator. Get rankings from top-ranked analyst Jake Seeley, tips from award winner Tim McCullough, and insights from Hall of Famer Scott Engel. Enter code FNTSY at checkout and get your Roto Experts exclusive Edge Fantasy Baseball package now. That is promo code FNTSY at checkout. Now, George, I want to talk about an article that was written for the exclusive Edge package, Crush or Flush Catchers. It was written by Thomas McFeely. Before we get into the article, I just want to get your overall opinion as far as catchers go in terms of fantasy baseball, because they seem to be kind of a polarizing position where some people feel as if that you need the two catcher leagues because it makes it a lot more challenging. Some feel are strongly against that because you're wasting roster space with a guaranteed negative player. Where do you land on that side of it? How do you feel about catchers in terms of fantasy baseball?
Well, anybody who listens to me or reads anything I write knows I hate catchers. Mm. Absolutely hate them. I don't hate catchers. I hate the position. The reason I hate them is simple. It's a brutal position to play. I mean, you got to crouch a million times during the heat of the summer. You're getting hit with balls, foul tips. You're getting hit with bats on backswings. You're still getting hit by runners. It's a brutal position, right? They also sit on average once a week. That's 26 games you're losing right there. I'm not spending a high pick on a catcher. I never do. You know, and not unless the guy falls to me. And any draft, you always look at my catches. I always end up with the Wellington Castillos of the world, guys like that. I'll wait until round 15, 16, 17 to take a catcher. It's just the way I am. I prefer one catcher leagues for that reason. If I do play in a two catcher league, another thing you don't almost guarantee is that my second catcher will not be a guy on a major league roster. It'll be a top minor leaguer that I'm hoping to get called up in June, July. The reason is simple. There aren't enough catchers to go around. Joe Pisapia, though he and I do the Fantasy Black Book on Sunday mornings, brings out a great stat. Only 9 catchers in MLB had more than 400 at-bats last year.
Wow.
Think about that. 9. All right? Nobody's playing in a 9-team league.
Nope.
All right, we all play generally 12, 15-team leagues. There just aren't enough to go around. If you're starting two, you're starting some schleb. I mean, a guy who's going to bat 220, maybe hit a couple of home runs. I would rather take zeros for the first 2 months of the season, 3 months of the season, but my average doesn't get killed. Yeah, sure, I lose some counting stats, but not many. Not many that should really matter. And I'll take a chance of that top catcher gets called up and he plays and he does some damage in the second half. I'm trying to protect my team here. I'm not cutting off my nose to spite my face. Oh, I'm gonna catch and prove a point. No, right. It's a strategy I've used and I've used many times, and generally it's successful where I don't get hurt. I mean, that may not help me, but it doesn't hurt me either, and that's what I'm looking for there. I prefer one catcher leagues for that matter, for that reason. It's a brutal position, and thankfully it seems like for me more leagues I play in, not on purpose, mind you, but more and more leagues are going to one catcher.
I think the one thing is, as I've started to kind of listen to more people on this side of the bay, it does seem pretty much, you know, accepted among all that catchers stink. And it really just comes down to, you know, one side seems kind of, you know, of the opinion that it adds more strategy to it. It makes it difficult because when you are in, you know, standard, say, 12-team league, that you're just going to wait on catcher. And that's just, you're going to take whatever the guy's there, the 9th, 10th catcher on the board, and you're just going to be fine with it and you'll move on. And that's just not strategy. And while I understand that point, I think that the idea that you're forcing people to take negative players is difficult. Tony Cincotta compared them to tight ends, and I thought that was an interesting comparison where, you know, there's not an abundance of guys, but, you know, at least if you play in a two tight end league, the odds are that you're going to be able to pick a specific matchup according for that Sunday where you think that you're going to be able to get some positive points, maybe even a guy that pops on a specific day. Whereas you've mentioned there with catchers, it's not just that they're negatives, but they're hardly playing.
Yeah, it's a tough position, especially in a weekly lineup. Daily lineup, at least you have some maneuverability here, but in a weekly lineup, like I said, I just hate it. I mean, Gary Sanchez may be the one player I wouldn't put in this category because he could do a hell of a lot of damage when he does play. Mm. But everybody else, and this includes Buster Posey, you know, who seems to be gets banged up as the season goes on because he's not built like Gary Sanchez. I can't spend a high draft pick on it. I just can't do it. And once again, this the league I'm in, the great that I'm still drafting in now, the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational, I think that's the name of it. I almost took JT Realmuto because he fell to round 14. Mm. Because it seems like everybody was doing the same strategy that I was doing, that they weren't taking cat. They weren't taking cat. So at round 14, I'm like, all right, now the value's there.
Yeah,
you know, it's a 15-team league too, so plenty of it wasn't much out there anyway. So that's the one time I would take a top catcher. It ended up being I got sniped the pick before me by Andrea Lamont. She took JT Realmuto. So yeah, I was getting sniped. It never feels good, mm-hmm. but because I, you know, it's a slow draft, so you had hours. So I'm like, all right, fine. If Realmuto falls to me, I'll take him. And then, you know, you wait hours for your pick, and, oh, he's there. And then you're all ready to click the draft, and then you see someone take it before you. That's one of those pencil breakers where you're like, you got to be freaking kidding me, okay? I generally don't get all that upset about being sniped because, listen, it's going to happen. But in this case, in a slow draft, I probably get more upset than other times because you're waiting all that long, and you see, oh, he's falling to me. Yes, 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 click, click, cross off other guys. All right, I'll take Realmuto. And then no, and then I ended up waiting, I think, 5-6 more rounds, and I got Wellington Castillo, which I'm not complaining about because a Wellington Castillo type, which he's top 10 but barely top 10, but you know, he's playing in Chicago, the ball is going to fly out of there, and I was able to get him in round 18, round 19.
Yeah.
I mean, that's fantastic. I mean, one catch league, in my mind, that's what more and more people should be looking to do. If you don't want to spend a third round pick on Gary Sanchez, which I do not, and I'm a Yankee fan, but I do not want to spend a third round pick on any catcher, then wait forever.
Yeah, I'll tell you, the one I remember I got sniped, it was over at the GST League. And I don't know why. See, every time I get sniped, for some reason, I get super upset, even if the guy is completely irrelevant. But I had my heart set on taking Jonathan Stewart just because I was like, oh, you know what? This is a good chance. Maybe McCaffrey goes down. He's small. It was going to be great. And he went the pick before. I was like, damn it. And Adam Ronis turns to me and goes, are you kidding me? I was like, what? He goes, because Jonathan Stewart is going to make or break your fantasies. And I'm like, that's a good point. All right, I'll move on now.
I might have said the same thing as Ronis. Yeah, there are certain guys you shouldn't be mad about. Right. Come on, it's Stewart, for crying out loud. I know when it comes to a draft, like I said, I generally don't get upset, all that upset about being sniped, but I don't want people who think like me anywhere near me. Scott Engel, you know, I love making fun of Scott, but he and I are on the same wavelength a lot. So if he's around me, if he's drafting before me or after me, I know they're going to be rounds where he's going to snipe me more often than I would prefer, because, you know, we think alike. So I know the same players are on his mind that are on mine. So I hate that. I want somebody who's nowhere near thinking like me. You know, that's where they go, well, take off the wall picks. I don't have to worry about it. But listen, the bottom line is we all get sniped. I mean, you're drafting in baseball, it's 28 rounds generally, 23 starters, 5 bench. Yeah. So, you know, odds of you going all 28 and someone not taking your player, not good. You just have to deal with it. You can't be thrown off. That's the most important thing. You cannot be thrown off where you're breaking pencils, you're yelling and screaming, and then, you know, I'll just take this guy then. You can't do stuff like that. Yeah. You know, if someone, like I said, someone took Realmuto, I want him. It doesn't mean I took my next best catcher. No, mm-hmm. I had plan B. I don't remember what the plan was, but as I mentioned, I took, Castillo 5-6 rounds later. Mm-hmm. I just went out to the next best player on my board. I wasn't happy about it, but you can't let it ruin your draft. You can let it ruin your day, but not your draft.
Day doesn't matter. Draft, way more important. Let's talk about Thomas McFeely's article here that you can get on the Exclusive Edge package. It is titled Crush or Flush Catchers. Pretty simple. Guys he likes, crush. Guys he dislikes, flush. My favorite is just the opening line of this article. Here you go, George. It's, every time I draft a catcher, I feel like taking a shower.
I agree with them. Once again, it does feel, especially if you spend an early pick, it does feel dirty.
Yeah, he says nothing in fantasy baseball makes me feel dirtier than looking the other way and ignoring the skill metrics of hitters, but catchers force you to do that in almost every case. He does, though, go on to talk about the three studs, the crush crowd, and people that he does not like. And the three studs, he's got them, you know, sectioned off here. It's Gary Sanchez, it's Buster Posey, and it's Wilson Contreras. Now, for Gary Sanchez, he called him a flush simply because it breaks down to the value. The ADP currently is around 23, and he feels like there are just far more safer bets that you can get in that spot, and he just doesn't feel like he can trust Gary Sanchez to top 33 homers and 90 RBIs this season. You mentioned that you clearly like Sanchez of the guys, but you hear that ADP, and I mean, the way you've been talking about catchers, I'm assuming you would agree that you will be off Sanchez just because of this price.
In any redraft league, yes. I mean, I'm a Yankee fan. I love the Yankees. I think Sanchez is going to have a monster year. I think he actually may be the better hitter overall, the best hitter on that team. Overall hitter, not power, but yeah, I think he's the best overall hitter. So I love Gary Sanchez, but I'm not spending a third round pick. It's just not going to happen for the same reasons. He's going to sit 26 games.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not like, oh, he's the American League. He'll DH some of those games. Yeah, maybe a couple. But they also got Stanton and Judge. Right. One of those guys going to DH most days. You know, because you can't have both those guys out in the outfield as Stanton is starting to prove in left field. So it's rough. You know, there are situations. Listen, in my home league, now you mentioned Contreras. In my home league, it's a keeper league. We keep three players. I have Contreras drafted around 14. So I actually have to think, as much as I hate catchers, and I've gone on this diatribe about Contreras, about catchers, and so many times in these radio shows and in print, I hate the position. I do. But I'm probably going to have to go keep Contreras because he's in round 14. It's all about value. Mm-hmm. Because I may not love it, the value is telling me, well, you know, maybe I can keep him around 14. In a draft, he's probably going around 7. That's 7 rounds of value there. So I may not like to keep a catcher, but in that case, I do. It's going to be the same thing with Sanchez. If I had him in round probably 7 or 8 or lower, I would probably keep him as well. But as far as a redraft, mm-hmm. I'm just not going to – there's no way I'll be able – you'll never be able to talk to me, talk me into taking him in round 3 over guys, you know, a top starting pitcher.
Right.
You know, Strasburg might be there. You know, over guys I need – Rizzo is falling to the third. Dozier could be there. You know, I just can't do it. You'll never be able to talk me into taking it over a top player at any other position.
I will say the good thing for you, at least, is depending on how you feel about Mr. McFeely's opinion, is he did label Contreras a crush out of the three studs. He said that he has improved his skills last year, particularly in the first quarter of the season, better plate patience and contact rate, walks up, Ks are down, and he thinks that he could hit for the 280 to 285 range. So that's positive, and I think that that's another thing that people always have to factor in is the value. Maybe you don't like catchers, but as George just said right there, if you're getting seven rounds of value, it's hard to pass up on. Now, the third stud is Buster Posey, and pretty much what it boils down to for McFeely here is just that he is expecting a big drop-off where it's just not going to match the ADP. He's in the mid-50s right now, and Posey hit 320, but he's expecting that that could fall 30 to 40 points, and the power is just not there, and it's impossible for him to stomach taking a guy like Buster Posey in that range when there's a 30 home run guy or a potential ace who could be on the board for you.
Yeah, listen, I agree with Tom. I don't know if the average is going to come down there. I think Posey's a very good hitter. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I've been playing fantasy since the late 80s. All right, so once again, dating myself here. I don't believe, and I play 10, 12 teams a year. I don't think I've ever had Buster Posey on my team. You know, because once again, it just goes to show you, I won't draft a catcher early. Mm-hmm. You know, Sanchez I do have on one team because it was an auction. Then auctions are completely different. You know, I was able to get him at a good price, and it's a deep keeper. So I think I've had him as a minor leaguer. So I just don't take catchers. I don't keep catchers. It's a brutal position. I like Posey. And people have to realize, it's not the player I'm knocking. I like Posey. Love Gary Sanchez. Love Contreras. And there's another catcher, too, that I mentioned. I like Wellington Castillo. But I'm not spending early picks on it. And McFeely said why. Because there'll be over 30 home run guys that I can go out there and grab. You know, that are going to play more games. That's the key for you. They're going to play more games. You know they're going to sit. A baseball season has 26 weeks, usually. This year might be 27 since they're starting on a Thursday. I haven't done that. But that means, on average, they're all going to sit once a week, 26. Yes, Posey might play some of those games at first base. Might. But when you combine that with, once again, getting hit with the foul tips, crouching all the time in the heat, getting hit with bats, getting hit with runners, the injury risk is what? Tripled? Quadrupled? Quintupled? I mean, you keep going up here. They have a better chance of getting hurt. They're already going to sit. What's your over-under on games played as far as starts? I'm not talking about they get a pinch hit. Yay. 140 is now your automatic over-under. You throw in an injury risk, maybe it's now to 125 now. Plus, we got this new 10-day DL, which all teams love to take advantage of. Oh, yeah. If you have a hangnail, a paper cut, you're getting put on the DL, which is great to protect your asset here, but it hurts us. Mm-hmm. Hurts the fantasy owner here. Like I said, Kevin, you would never be able to talk me into it, not unless you're offering me a big check with a lot of zeros.
Well, let me see if I can talk you into the first guy that he's got here under outside of those top three guys that he has a crush on, and it's Salvador Perez. Pretty much what it was down to is 25 homers, 75 RBIs with a 260 average is fine for a guy at catcher, and with the ADP is at 112. Is that still too high for your liking, or is Perez perhaps going to give you the numbers in the appropriate range for you to pull the trigger, or is that still too high?
It's too high for me. Mm-hmm. And once again, a 12-team league, you're talking round 9, round 10. Right? Yeah, about round 10, 120th player. So I won't be taking a catcher then. I like Perez, and he's one guy who does play a lot of games. He probably plays too many games. I think that's why his numbers trail off in the second half, but he liked what he can do. He had the most home runs of his career last year, 27, drove in the most runs. I mean, maybe the RBIs come down so the team doesn't have the same players anymore. No Hosmer, no Kane. You know, Moustakas is back. Yay. Like the player, and for a catcher, he's in my top five. Mm-hmm. I mean, absolutely in my top five. So if I have him on my team, I'm thrilled. Problem is, not paying for it again. You know, but he is in that range where you mentioned his ADP says 112. So that's around round 9, round 10. If he slips to round 2 rounds later, round 12, 13, that's when I start to look at him. So he is a player that wouldn't shock me if he ends up on a team or two.
Tons of stuff that you can get on the Fantasy Exclusive Edge Package. So make sure you check that out. We're coming back. We're talking to Cole Zwicker as we prepare for March Madness. That's next here on Fantasy Sports Today.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things, just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
And we are back here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Kevin Walsh and George Kurtz here on Fantasy Sports Today. And I want to tell you about the DKMS 2018 March Madness Special on Monday, March 12th at 4 p.m. Eastern Time right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network with host Craig Carton. Get the edge on filling out your bracket with analysis from Greg Sussman, Mike Blewett, and special guest Yahoo's Brad Evans. And if you're looking to make some money, Gabe Moore and Black Jack Fletcher will line your pockets. The broadcast will be simulcast on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube live page. It's the DKMS 2018 March Madness Special on Monday, March 12th at 4 p.m. Eastern Time here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. And with March Madness coming, there's going to be a lot of prospects for you to keep your eye on. So to help us get ready for that, we are bringing in Cole Zwicker, the co-founder and writer for the Stepien and the NBA draft expert. Cole, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
I want to just start with an overall look for you. When you're looking at these tournament games, do you ever find yourself valuing them more than other games here? I guess it's kind of trying to compare in the NBA regular season to playoff games, but it's such a small sample size. So how much can these performances really move a guy up or down your board?
It's definitely a factor because they're bigger scale games and there's some recency bias involved. I try to keep myself grounded and try to look at the overall sample of the player. He could have a good March Madness run. We've seen that with a Buddy Hield type, some of these upperclassmen. If you get hot from three, if you have a couple 30-point games, that can we know that can influence your draft stock. But for me personally, I try to stay grounded and look at the overall sample.
I want to ask you about a guy who may not be actually able to make the tournament, a guy that the both of us like. I know you're very high on him. It is Trae Young, the Oklahoma Star guard. It's been a wild ride for him. He was starting off so hot. Now he's slowed down to the point where pretty much without him carrying everybody on Oklahoma, there's a chance that this team misses the tournament. Is that in any way going to be impacting your view on him?
I don't think so. I think he just ran out of gas down the stretch. I mean, we're talking about somebody with like a sub 39% usage rate. We've never seen that for a college freshman ever. So he is the vehicle. He is the motor behind that entire offense. I don't think that is going to impact him that much as far as not making the tournament. From my point of view, from the NBA's point of view, I think they do want him to make the tournament, make a run, and kind of prove that, you know, this steady decline in conference play is more to maybe a lack of rest or whatnot than it is a lack of skill and struggling more with higher caliber competition and length.
Cole, is there a player or players that you're looking forward to watching that you believe needs to prove something to you in the tournament?
It's a great question. I want to see if Miles Bridges can just answer the moment. I mean, they're going to go deep in the tournament. Michigan State would probably be my favorite to win the entire thing. So if he performs well in big moments, that's something that I want to see from him as a score type. If he can command the ball, make a play for himself or for others down the stretch of games, that'll be something I'm looking for. I have him as a top 10 pick, and that probably won't change. But I think he could move up and down a little bit for me based on just how he answers the call as a creator type.
Miles Bridges is one of those guys that's interesting because when a guy returns, they are running a risk, and everybody wants to see they want to see steady improvement. Bridges has kind of stayed about the same from what he was at freshman year, but you can kind of I think you can give him a bit of credit because people are now game planning for him a lot more. He's seeing probably a lot more difficult looks. So for Bridges, as of right now, before we even get into the tournament, how do you evaluate his decision to return? Do you think it was helpful, or would he have been better off heading to the NBA?
Honestly, I mean, for him personally, probably leaving after his freshman year would have been better just because his stock was highest. And when you return, all there is pretty much a downfall, especially in this class where it turned out to be much stronger at the top. But at least he did prove that his shooting was legitimate. And that was the one thing he really needed to do, because that was his swing skill going into the NBA. And he's really buttressed that, going 89% from the free throw line. He's improved his shot diversity. He's made more shots off the dribble. And that's, those were all things that NBA executives wanted to see from him. So I don't think he really hurt his stock significantly. He's still going to be a lottery pick, but with how deep this class is at the top as far as the upper echelon talent, he probably did slide a little bit.
You're talking about the top of the class. Michael Porter Jr. comes back. I would like to consider it his debut. I know he had the 2 points, and I think that was Iowa State in the opener for Missouri. But he played the full game, obviously not as much as he would if he was fully healthy. But he comes back. They lose the game in the SEC tournament, but they should be set to make the NCAA tournament. How much can Porter move for you based on what you see? Because I think something that was plain to see is there's still a lot of rust this guy needs to knock off.
Yeah, and he doesn't have his legs at all. Like, this is a guy who can dunk easily, and he wasn't even attempting dunks in that game. He had a couple fast break layups that usually he's throwing down. So I don't think you're going to be able to gauge too much of him, honestly. He's just not there. His coordination looked off as far as handling the ball. We'll get to see his shot making. I already know he can shoot the ball, so I'm not really concerned there. I don't think you're going to be able to get the full sample in this realm of time. It's just not enough time to get your legs reacclimated, get your conditioning up. So I'm not expecting too much from him, but anything he does show is only going to help him. But this is someone who executives have already seen at lower levels. He's played the All-Star Circuit, like Hoop Summit. Executives have seen him pretty expansively. So I don't think there's going to be a ton of questions about him unless he doesn't clear the medical with his back issue.
Cole, Grayson Allen is a polarizing player, to say the least. If he turns in a most outstanding player of the tournament performance, could you see him moving into the first round?
I could. I mean, he's a shot maker, so he has positional size. He's a shot maker, and he has some athleticism attacking closeouts. He can pass a little bit on the move. So if he has a big tournament, I can totally see him sliding into the late 20s. It depends on who declares, though. There's some higher upside guys, in my opinion, but he's the kind of guy that we've seen historically with a big tournament run can capture the audience of the NBA team and kind of move up a little bit.
I think that's one of the things for Grayson is if Duke goes on that one of those magical runs, you're going to see him shoot up draft boards, and maybe not in as tight of the circles as the experts, but I think that they're going to be, at least in the mainstream, people are going to be oozing over the idea of Grayson Allen sliding into the first round. I want to talk to you about another guy, though, that is starting to move up, and he's actually starting to challenge perhaps even Trae Young for the top point guard, and that's Colin Sexton. With what he has Alabama doing right now in the SEC tournament, they're going to be playing today at 1, going up against Kentucky. I mean, is Sexton moving for you at all? Can he actually challenge Trae Young for that top point guard spot?
He can, in the realm of the NBA. Not for me personally. Mm-hmm. He's just on a hot streak right now. He's making shots. Colin Sexton is going to look a lot better when he makes shots. I think he's 9 of 14 from 3 over his last couple games. So you have to keep that in mind, where you have to take the entire season sample as a whole. And what he's doing for Alabama right now is notable. But there was a lot of moments this season where he wasn't performing across the board. Even in that game, I think yesterday, he only had one assist. So you have to look at the overall body of work. And yes, he's on a hot shooting streak. He is athletic. I think he's going to be like a solid NBA player. At worst, probably a backup, just because he's so damn competitive. He's he's really geared to thrive in the NBA. But I'm not going to put too much stock in just a hot shooting streak.
I think that that's fair. When you watch Sexton, I think that's the thing that stands out so much is the compete, and people love to see that. He is, I saw someone tweet out the idea of him being an old school baller, right? He has no Twitter page, he has no Instagram page, so this is a guy that he's very old school, and he just wants to go out there and hoop, but I can't put him past Trae Young when I just see the way that the gravity, I think, is the way to explain it with Trae Young. It's just all eyes are on him. I understand that there is a bit more strength and athleticism to Sexton's game, but I think it's fair to say that just the shooting difference between the two, at least the consistency that should be there, it should keep Young ahead of Sexton.
I agree, and I think the passing difference, too, is significant. Trae Young's an outstanding passer. I think that's actually his best skill overall. His shooting is his most important skill. We've seen the importance of off-the-dribble shooting at the NBA level, and Trae Young has that in spades. But it's really the passing that makes him kind of a pure point guard, where Sexton has always kind of been a self-creator in high school. In every stage of his life, he's been kind of a scoring guard type. And he's not a crazy athlete. He's a good one, but he's not an uber athlete, not to the level of like a John Wall that would lead me to put him over a guy like Trae Young.
Cole, who was a player that could really start to gain more attention, or players for that matter, with a big run of a dance?
I hope it's Jaren Jackson. I mean, he's already getting, I think, the requisite attention for the most part, but maybe he can move up even more into, like, the top three conversation. I have him as a top three guy. He, right now, he's number two on my board. So I really think that if he shows more of these flashes of handling the ball, he's had a couple moments this year. He puts the ball on the floor. He gets to the rim. He passes on the move. He shows more perimeter skill. I think he can move up in executive's eyes because right now his playmaking deficiencies are what's keeping him behind guys like Marvin Bagley, DeAndre Ayton, as far as a scoring type, because that's what the NBA covets most in the top five are scorers. So if he has like a big kind of scoring run in the NCAA tournament, I think he could actually move into like the top three.
There's something about Jaren Jackson and Mikal Bridges, the forward out of Villanova, that I feel there's something similar about them where I'm not sure if they could ever be the best player on an NBA championship team or even a very serious contender. But it does seem as if they were, the both of them were almost built in a lab for what you need in today's game. Jaren Jackson can protect the rim at an insane level. He actually, I think he's still doing it at a higher rate than Mo Bamba is, which is complete nonsense. He's able to shoot better than any of these bigs in the class. That's exactly what you want from big. And then you've got a guy like Mikal Bridges with a 7'2 wingspan. He can guard 1 through 4, and he's stroking it at an incredible rate from three. Is it fair, though, to say that they could not be the best player on a serious contender, or is that selling these guys short? Do they have that within them to actually reach that superstar level?
No, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think contributing to winning basketball, those guys are ideal superstar role players, as I'd call them. I think there's a little bit more offensive upside with both of them. Like, Mikal has shown more shot diversity this year, shooting off the dribble, shooting off the move. But I don't think he's the number one guy. But also, I don't think a lot of these guys are going to be number one guys. That's a really high threshold when you talk about number one guy in the championship team. There's maybe 3, 4, or 5 of those guys in the NBA right now. So maybe Luka Doncic for me would be that guy. But I think you hit the nail on the head exactly as far as Jaren Jackson, Mikal Bridges contributing to winning basketball. I think that's their biggest selling point.
I want to ask you about the other two bigs that are on these top-tier teams, because this is one of the things to always watch, just how the team can perform can do a lot for the way they go, right? You mentioned that you like Michigan State to get far. Duke obviously has a great chance with Marvin Bagley, and Arizona has a great chance with Ayton, and Bagley and Ayton more so than Jackson. They're getting the big attention. I think there's certainly a case to be made that Jackson is the most important player for Michigan State, but Bagley is Duke's superstar. He's putting up the 30 and 10s on a regular basis. Ayton last night, what he did against UCLA was monstrous. Do you think that these two could perhaps start to create separation? Maybe not for you as much, because I know how much you like Jaren Jackson, but in the public's eye with this deep tournament run with, you know, just 30 and 10, back to back to back.
Absolutely. I think that's absolutely the case. I mean, we know how much the NBA and the popular consensus has an affinity for scoring and just general production. If you put 30 and 10 and you go deep in the tournament and that there's that level of confidence in their athleticism and their offensive skill, I think that's absolutely on the table. And both of those guys have shown the proficiency. Like, Marvin Bagley can take over games with his athleticism at this level. I mean, he can get to a level that nobody else can match. DeAndre Ayton has the size, skill, kind of fluidity, power advantage over basically everybody. So you can absolutely see that. I mean, it's going to further the confidence with guys and their safety in the draft. I mean, a lot of people talk about these guys with upside, but they have very clear offensive roles in the NBA that I think will be valuable. It's just how much can they bring on the other side of the ball.
Cole, let me ask you a question. Okay. Give me a dark horse team or two that you believe is going to surprise. Not the favorites. You don't have to go out on a limb here, but a team that you're looking forward to watching during the tournament.
I love Texas Tech. They're not really a dark horse because they're really good at basketball, but that's the overall team where I love their motion scheme. They have Evans as kind of their leader. They have Zaire Smith, Culver, two freshmen that are really good, really know how to play team defense, play in a team construct. I just like the way they're designed overall. I think they can make a deep run, especially with that leadership coming from Evans and then their ancillary support. They just play like a very conducive style to winning. Defensively, offensively, I think they can go far.
All right, here's the thing, Cole. He's not in the tournament. He's not in NCAA, but Luka Doncic is your guy. We spoke about this very briefly on Twitter, just potential fits for him, and you still have him a full tier ahead of everybody else. Is there anything that you think could happen within this tournament that could actually move a player up above Doncic, or is he that cemented in your eyes as the best player?
I try to remain open-minded. If Jaren Jackson, for instance, starts showing more offensive proclivity, he gets more self-creation situations, I'd think about it. But it's going to be a hard sell just because of how much I value Doncic's primary initiator upside. He's a 6'8 guy who can initiate your offense. You can play point guard, essentially giving you the Ben Simmons dynamic, but with a guy who can actually shoot off the dribble and pass at an extremely high level at a pick and roll. I just think from a team building standpoint, that is one of the most rare commodities you can acquire. And I think the instincts are off the charts. We see what Lonzo Ball is doing defensively for the Lakers, the guy with just supreme instincts. Doncic is going to be able to make up for a lack of explosive athleticism in other categories. So to answer your question more succinctly, I don't think anybody's going to be able to move up, but I'm open to it. I mean, if somebody blows me away, if Ayton starts checking the rim and plays team defense, which he hasn't really done at an elite level all year, I'd think about it. But overall, I think I'm going to stick with Doncic.
I think that's fair. And again, I told you there's more I want to get into with him. I want to scout the defense more. I think the one thing that he certainly has over a guy like Trae Young is just the size. And at least he's not going to get completely bullied because he's 6'8". He's got some strength to him. And the one thing that I don't know if people talk about Doncic enough, but he's got swag to his game. And there's a little bit of feistiness to him as well. You see him in those highlights. He's not afraid to chirp. He's not afraid to give a little Steph Curry shimmy. And I do appreciate that.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely has an edge to him. He doesn't fit that whole popular narrative of international guys being soft. He's a feisty competitor, and that's what I like about him the most. Those kind of fringe, he's not a fringe athlete. I think he's an above-average athlete for an NBA, kind of 3-4 type. But what puts him over the top is competitiveness, effort level, and just playing with that edge, and I think he has that.
Thank you so much. That is Cole Zwicker, the co-founder and writer for The Stepien, the NBA draft expert. Cole, we're going to be looking to have you back on as we get closer to the NBA draft. Thanks for coming on.
Anytime.
All right, that is going to wrap up that interview. Next, we're going to be joined by the man Emory Hunt to go from NBA prospects to NFL prospects. He was at the Combine, so we're going to get his reaction to all of that stuff. So keep it here with Fantasy Sports Today on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.